Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Liberty Advisor podcast. And what I want to get into today, and actually, let me back up. It is August 21st, 2018, which also coincides with the longest stock market rally, or is it the longest stock market rally? And also coincides with the S&P 500 hitting its new all-time high. So not sure if they could have planned that any better. So you've got, I'm sure you've got guys down on Wall Street popping bottles over that. Definitely a coincidence that both of those happened on the same day. But one of the more interesting things that a finance nerd like myself, I was scrolling through the headlines like I do every day, and I saw an article from Bloomberg, and it asked, the longest market rally in history, take a closer look. And really what this gets into is if you take a step back and try to actually pinpoint what really constitutes the longest market rally ever, what they base this off of is what's called basically when we entered a bear market. And a bear market is going to be defined when the stock market drops by 20% or more. And so that is just, you know, a common, now it differs from a recession, where a recession is 2 quarters of negative GDP growth. Now, you know, there's all sorts of different ways that they game the GDP and rig that, but that's not really what we're going to get into today. But it's a very clear-cut definition, although arbitrary, that 20% decline constitutes a bear market. And so what they're saying is that this, basically, this bull market started in October of 1990, but in October 1990, the market dropped 19.92%. So those 0.08 of a point there actually mean that we did not actually have a bear market in October 1990. So what you'd really have to do is go back to, I believe it's the crash of 87, October of 87, where the market went down a little bit over 33%. I was only 9 months old, so I don't have the exact numbers memorized, but I do remember that somewhere right around there. So if you're actually going by that, this market that we have currently would still be about 1,000 days, give or take, away from hitting that all-time high. And again, this was from the Bloomberg article. So, I mean, a lot of times, you know, this is stuff that, you know, I basically just took it for granted, which, you know, I don't really take anything for granted. And of course, you know, the one time I take something for granted that, you know, ends up being fake news. Now, another way that some people like to value when, you know, in terms of going through these awards of what's been the longest, you know, give or take, stock market rally. Now, some people actually don't actually consider a new bull market until we've actually surpassed the previous bull market highs. So in this case, basically, we're looking at February 19th, 2013 is when the S&P 500 eventually surpassed its October 2007 highs. Now, I don't really know. I don't have the data in front of me, and it wasn't in the Bloomberg article, you know, where this rally is in context of other rallies if you use that market data. But, you know, the main thing I really do want to point out is that not only is the stock market at a new supposed all-time high, but another thing that is all-time high are different market valuations and also optimism, which usually people are most optimistic, you know, right before things end up going bad. And I'm not saying that things are going to go bad tomorrow. This is definitely a harbinger of, you know, everything's going to happen within the next 12 months. You know, right now, I really think that we are in an extra innings, you know, to use a baseball analogy, we are in extra innings where if Hillary would have gotten elected, I really feel like at that point that the shoe would have dropped out and we would have seen, you know, us enter the ninth inning and potentially be game over. But now all this newfound optimism really breeds all these other self-fulfilling expectations of how great things really are, which really the perception of the economy and, you know, really, you know, I think actually is more important than how the actual economy is doing. And this is not to say that I think Trump is, you know, sabotaging anything or doing things purposely to, you know, wreck the economy like we would have seen underneath Obama, where Obama was really, you know, a, you know, ardent follower of the, what's their names, Cloward and Piven over at Columbia University, where their basically their model was, we need to overwhelm the welfare system. And then once the overwhelming of the welfare system collapses everything, then at that point, what you're going to see is we'll be able to remake America in our own image. Now, thankfully, that scenario didn't play out. And, you know, to the best of the powers that be, they were trying to make sure Hillary got in there. But one, go kind of getting back here on track is, and this is something that I've mentioned many times before. I had a podcast that I believe it was entitled, it wasn't originally a podcast, it was a speech I'd given called The Trump Effect and Why Good News, that's in quotes, is Bad News. And I'll say that's in quotes as well. And what I talked about there was something called the CAPE ratio, which is the cyclically adjusted PE ratio, or price over earnings. And really, the long story short on this one, if I skip to the end, is that the whenever you're in a situation like we're in now where the valuations are extremely high, that the forward 10-year return, that means if you look ahead at the next 10 years, has been very dismal. It's been about a little under 3%. But if you look at standard deviations, it'd be anywhere from about, I'm just eyeballing this here, maybe up about 6, 7% to about negative 6%. Again, just eyeballing that. And, you know, not a really great place to be historically. And this doesn't mean that, and what this really means is that, you know, you could have 1 year where the markets, you know, crashes huge, and then you've got, you know, then it marches back, and eventually you've got, you know, your, you know, 3% gains. But, you know, once you factor in what inflation is, you know, you'd have to ask yourself if there's really gains at all. So we're at a standpoint right now where things from a historical valuation standpoint are very, very overvalued. Now, this one, there's about 8 different measures that this Zero Hedge article entitled 7 Measures of Expected Return, in parentheses, and none of them are good. And that is the main one I wanted to focus on. The other stuff I'd really be nerding out and probably lose just about everybody who is kind enough to be listening to this. And if you are listening to this, you know, I really definitely appreciate the listen. I recently have gotten off Facebook, or I temporarily deactivated it until some of the shadow banning stops. I tried creating a fake account so that way I could still manage my Liberty Advisor page, or at least not lose it. And then that fake account, they then said they needed proof of me, of who I was, because something to do with, you know, this page has such great reach that we need to make sure that basically you're not a Russian. So I think I have another 7 days or so to answer the commissars over at Facebook. But where I'm going with all this, if you like this information, if you like the Facebook page that I had before, we're really trying to expand over here. And one of the easiest things you guys can do without any monetary donation would be to, if you're listening to this on whatever platform, maybe if you could rate it 5 stars, give a nice little review. If you're not gonna write a nice review, then maybe just don't do it. But, you know, I really would really appreciate, you know, anyone who is listening to this to give a nice review. And also, you know, follow me over on DTube and Steemit, Steemit, which is a decentralized blockchain where social media platform where essentially, you know, you can't be censored. You know, if the information is out there, it's out there. There's no central body that can really take this down. And that's why I want to invest my time and energy on these platforms. I mean, look at all the time and energy I wasted over here on Facebook, and now they can just flip a dial and all of a sudden they, you know, said, oh, thank you for all that work, but we're going to make sure that 99% of the people that subscribe to you can't be reached. And oh, by the way, and I mean, I only had like 32,000 people following me, so not a huge number, but I mean, it would cost me over $100 just to have everybody who is following me see the posts that I've made, which I think is absolutely ludicrous and ridiculous, and is something that I don't want to play on anymore. I mean, I'm a little bit conflicted right now because I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe they want me to get off of there. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to be off it permanently. I'll probably be back on again whenever there's, you know, maybe some big news to share. But I'm also going to be telling people, you guys need to get off this plantation. You need to be getting off of, you know, this Zuckerberg, you know, social credit score system that they're trying to implement, where, I mean, it was just came out today that Facebook is going to have has their own user trust rating system where, you know, basically if social justice warriors can come out and say that, hey, you know, this guy was sharing, you know, supposed, you know, fake news, that all of a sudden, you know, they won't post your stuff as much. I mean, they've already basically shut me down by 99%. So not really sure how much worse it can possibly get. But I know I am a little hopeful that maybe Trump can do, you know, a few things maybe to help right this ship. But at the end of the day, we're begging to be let back on to a system or treated fairly in a system that hates us, a system that wants to basically socially manipulate us into either fighting with each other or, you know, always, you know, being thrown, you know, that new, you know, dangling that new little, you know, carrot out in front of us to go attack that while never really addressing some of the major issues that are out there. But getting back to the CAPE ratio, why this is important is if you're close to retirement and right now, you know, you are basically banking on, okay, I've got $1 million saved up. Well, if you end up losing, you know, only averaging 3%, but, you know, maybe it comes in the order of returns, or maybe year three, you lose 30 or 40% and you were hoping to retire that year, well, then you're absolutely screwed. Or if you were hoping to retire, you know, and then something like this happens 3 years later or happens 2 years before, you know, anywhere in this retirement red zone that Prudential likes to call it, you're absolutely screwed. And that's why what we're doing, you know, just to kind of give a little disclaimer, I am a financial advisor. And even though I'm a financial advisor, I'm not your financial advisor. Well, unless of course I am your financial advisor, then in which case, you know, your planning advice is going to be customized. And if you have questions of what I'm saying today, either call or email me, but you can find out more about me at thelibertyadvisor.com. So I'm trying to give a quick shameless plug into the disclaimer, but you know, what you might think is my investment advice based on what I'm saying versus what, you know, the actual advice that I would give might vary greatly. So nothing I'm saying here, you know, is recommending that you go out and buy something or going out and shorting something, particularly shorting anything, because that could be really dangerous. Even though if you are right, one of the popular sayings are, you know, the market can remain, I'm trying to think what to solve. Maybe you can't remain solvent longer than the market can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent, which is always, you know, a big fear if you are going and shorting things. But we do think we have some strategies that, you know, will play out and will eventually, you know, actually prosper during these times. You know, especially we've got a protected growth portfolio that we put together where, especially if you're close to retirement, where we can actually hedge and protect the downside. I know here I am, you know, over here reading zero hedge all day, but I think for some people it is important to hedge. And traditionally what they would do is they might buy more bonds, but the bonds have very, very little upside, almost no upside at all. I mean, you're picking up, you know, 2-3% holding on to these bonds, and there's a huge amount of interest rate risk, which is basically the concept that as the interest rates go up, the underlying values of the bonds go down, sort of like a teeter-totter of sorts. But enough of that shameless plug. What I want to get into now are some of the potential black swans that I see out there in the economy. And there's really, a few of these that are really kind of coalescing all at really the perfect time to absolutely, you know, put the final nails in this coffin. Now, number one is the U.S. Federal Reserve System, which, you know, it's nothing U.S. about it or nothing federal about it. It's not reserving anything, whole nother topic. But they are set to sell off $600 billion off their balance sheet next year. $600 billion. At the same time, you've got the Treasury that's running, you know, probably by then close to a $100 billion a month deficit. I mean, give or take, I mean, probably, you know, really it's probably somewhere between 80 and 120. So call it 100 in the middle, whether I'm off by a little bit here or there. I mean, even if it's only another 600 billion, well, then that's 1.2 trillion, according to my initial math of 100 billion plus the 600 that the Fed's doing. You're looking at $1.6 trillion of new treasury bills. Well, who are buying our treasury bills? I mean, currently you've got, the Bank of Japan, who are the biggest owners. Well, the Bank of Japan or the Japanese are one of the most indebted people in the world, or potentially the most indebted, at a debt to GDP of over 200. And then you've got, the Chinese, well, they haven't really been adding too much to their positions. You've got the Federal Reserve, who actually is the top buyer, and they're actually now going to be the top seller. You've got the Europeans, who are completely broke. And this is really parlaying into the next leg of this perfect storm, where the European Central Bank, or ECB, come December, they're supposed to stop their bond buying purchases. And you've got people like Italy, and again, I'm linked to another Zero Hedge article. So if you are watching this, we will be posting this to DTube right now. So if you're listening, you know, I'd urge you guys to get an account there. I'll probably eventually be uploading it to some other, I'd say decentralized platforms as well, or just maybe some platforms that will not censor, or at least say they won't censor. And I guess before I get on to the ECB, so the Federal Reserve, and right now I'm looking at the Federal Reserve Economic Database, or FRED is what people call it. And if I'm really kind of eyeballing this, it looks like the 10-year Treasury got down to 1.38%. Now we're sitting at about 2.85. It's been hovering around 3. So you're looking at, you know, the Fed was only able to sell off, you know, this is like a 600-pound person that loses 5 pounds. And all of a sudden now they're saying that if they lose another pound, they're going to die. I mean, we've seen a doubling of interest rates from, some of it's, yes, some of it's to do with the Fed, but some of it also is to do with just the fact that the market is demanding higher interest rates. You're seeing, a doubling of interest rates when effectively we've taken the balance sheet from 4.4 trillion all the way down to 4.4 trillion and change, or it might be 4.39, or it's up there. It's something I could look up, but it's just such an infinitesimal small amount that we've been able to shed. And you've seen pretty big repercussions from this already so far. Now, this is also going to put a lot of upward pressure on basically, the cost of us having to, the interest rates. So if all the bonds we have to borrow all of a sudden, we need to roll these over and from paying, 1.3, 1.4 to now all of a sudden, the bonds have to mature at, paying 3, which is still a pretty low number. And you've got guys like Jamie Dimon of JPMorgan Chase, who recently even came out and said that that number could easily hit 5% in the very near future. So, I mean, just think about 5% on 20 trillion, that's over $1 trillion in interest. I think this year we're already at $500 billion a year of interest. And this is before we're, the Federal Reserve is really ramping up its balance sheet. It's before, the deficit's been absolutely exploding underneath Trump. That's one thing that conservatives really aren't willing to mention. And just getting back to ECB, because they're in a very similar predicament, potentially even worse, because what they were doing is they had actually negative interest rates and they were also buying corporate bonds, whereas the Federal Reserve was only actually buying supposedly mortgage-backed bonds, treasuries, and they weren't actually buying the buying any stocks, whereas the ECB, or sorry, corporate debt. So right now, so I mean that would be like the Federal Reserve buying Tesla stock, which, again, definitely no recommendations on that. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. I wouldn't necessarily short it either, but that's, definitely not recommending Tesla stock. So I just bring that up as an example. Now, what's going to happen when all of a sudden, Italy, who's been used to borrowing money at, near zero, all of a sudden the ECB stops their bond buying? Well, who's going to start buying Italian bonds, especially for, 2 or 3%? I mean, let me see where it's at now, just kind of eyeballing it here. I mean, it looks like we're at the 10-year Italian's at about 3.1. So almost the same as what you're getting here. I mean, why are you going to take the extra risk of investing in Italy when you can invest in America? And I'll say this in quotes, supposedly risk-free. It's just absolutely ridiculous to think that, anyone would do that. So Italy knows that their borrowing costs are going to skyrocket. They're going to blame this on, the speculators and all the short sellers. And we need to, so here's actually the exact quote, where he says, it is up to us to be credible and to overcome that speculative instinct, basically saying, hey, we need you guys to print more money because we are out of control. And, we need to blame this on, the speculators, not in the fact that we have a underlying massive systemic problem that is also made worse by the fact that you've got awful, awful demographics pretty much everywhere in the modern world, but particularly bad in Europe and Italy, where probably in the next, probably 50 years at the rate they're going, there's pretty much not even going to be any more Italians left in Italy at the rate that they're going. But it's not only them. You've got other big countries too, the pigs. So Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, Spain. You've got people like Deutsche Bank, who basically are an insolvent company. So I always find it funny when they're talking about other countries or other companies that, have issues because, it's sort of like the pot calling the kettle black. But all these things, all these, zombie banks and zombie companies have been kept alive. They have been, floated along here because of this artificial interest rate situation. And that is something that I think is going to come to an end. Another thing I want to bring up is you've got the Bank of Japan. Since 2013, they've bought over $20 trillion of Japanese stocks. I was looking, doing the math, it's about close to $200 billion, give or take, which is actual fascism, where you've got a bank that's just, typing up money out of thin air, and then they're using that money that they typed out of thin air to buy up their own stocks. That is the actual merger of corporation and government, also known as fascism, but the left is completely silent on that. Then you've got the Swiss, who've bought over $750 billion of foreign assets. I think someone said that, it works out to just American stocks. Like every citizen, family of four owns like 40,000 US of just US stocks in Switzerland. So this is absolutely unsustainable situation, which also makes, predicting this stuff very difficult. I mean, you've got a manipulated market with both in terms of interest rates, in terms of who's buying this stuff. And this is something that, as everyone's, popping bottles on Wall Street right now, they're completely overlooking. Nobody wants to talk about how these things are rigged. Nobody wants to talk about how, you know, China has their own national team that goes in and buys stocks. Nobody wants to talk about how the Bank of Japan goes in and buys stocks. And this is not conspiracy theory. I mean, right now this is a Reuters article I'm looking at where, I mean, they even show what day they go in and buy it. They used to basically not let their Tokyo Index or the TOPIX, T-O-P-X, go down by more than 0.2%, but recently they let it go down by 0.4%. And I think another, even in August 10th and 13th, they've let it fall the most they've let it fall before they stepped in to buy, which was 0.6 and 1.7% respectively when they bought it on August 10th and 13th. So this is not speculation of, oh, they might be doing this, they might be doing that. This is actual, you can go read about it in Reuters of how they're doing it. You know, they will tell you what they're doing. Just the average person out there is so focused on their own day-to-day stuff. They're so focused on, you know, whatever carrot social media has put out in front of them to get them fighting with their friends that they're not looking at these bigger issues. And certainly, I mean, the last people looking at these issues is Wall Street. So I know that the people that listen to me, you know, they're the ones who are, you know, hopefully going to be taking action on some of this. And again, if you're not working with a professional that really understands this stuff, that doesn't understand you, that doesn't understand your goals, I'll give it a cheap plug right now. So you can email me, tim@innovativewealth.com, or you can check out my website at thelibertyadvisor.com. We also have innovativewealth.com where, you know, we do all sorts of things with self-directed IRAs. We can even get you into crypto IRAs. We've got different pretty unique hedging strategies, and you've got myself as a retirement and, you know, charitable giving and estate planning expert on a lot of these different really complex and advanced issues to help see you through to retirement. So again, a quick shameless plug for what we're doing, but, you know, what we are doing is important because in order for you to basically come out of this ahead, you're going to have to take action ahead of time. You can't wait till after this stuff already unfolds, or you can't bury your head in the sand like an ostrich and then, you know, wake up one day and hope that everything is okay. Now is the time to take action on this stuff. Appreciate you guys listening. Again, it is August 21st, 2018. The stock market, as the S&P 500 hit an all-time high, both in the duration of its rally and the fact that it actually hit an all-time closing high of today. So that's it for today. Hopefully we'll get these out weekly. Please, again, rate us on iTunes, rate us on whatever other platforms you're on. Please rate us positively. I'll throw that in there. And see you guys later. Take care. Bye.